Baseball is back.
I want to see some real games.
The season is going to be different.
They've been given a gift with this 60-game schedule.
On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands.
There's a lot to talk about.
There's a stunning development.
And this is the place to do it.
Tony, he talks, I listen.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big One Safety Insurance, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wines, Gravely, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Robinson Cano is 2-for-4. He has singled each of his last two times up.
Wiggle your way out of this. Just get me an out and let's get out of here.
One strike pitch. Little floater backing up. He's got it. Peraza with a catch and the Red Sox win it. 6-5, the final. Goodness gracious, you said it all right there. Red Sox win it 6-5 as they snap the four-game skid here tonight. Brandon Workman leaves the bases loaded.
Yeah, here we go. Winning streak right around the corner. There you go. Red Sox. What was the final? 6-5? 6-5 winners last night over the New York Mets to win their second game of the season. And so here's what I'm hearing today, at least a little bit. I heard a little bit of this from Felger. Frankly, I was surprised. Maybe this is one that can get them going. Get them going where? Where exactly are they going to get going off of this?
You feel confident with Martin Perez on the mound after that performance last Saturday?
So there are those people, Murray, that, again, they're hopelessly optimistic and always look at games like this and say, yeah, this is the springboard that's going to get the Red Sox going. This is the springboard. They're going to use it like a trampoline. Okay? And I would tell you that there's very simple math here early in the baseball season. First, the Red Sox are 2-0 when Nathan Eovaldi pitches. Second, they are 0-4 when anybody else pitches. So now you tell me, can Eovaldi pitch every night or not? Because I don't think he can. And you know what's amazing, really? Like when you look at this part of it, and I couldn't be more serious about this. And by the way, 617-779-0985. We'll open up the phone lines right away because I do want your thoughts on that game last night. And I'll ask you a serious question. The fact that they won a game, and it was a real baseball game last night, finally. Through the first five games of the year, the Red Sox played a blowout that they won and then four blowouts that they lost. There weren't many games that were still in doubt, really in doubt, going into the seventh, eighth inning. You didn't have that. So last night they played one. Last night they pulled it out. And in all honesty, I think it was a good win. The Red Sox were down a couple of times to the Mets. Jacob DeGrom on the mound gets a 1-0 lead right in the first inning again. Right, Red Sox fall behind right away. They come back. They get two runs. Then the Mets go ahead 3-2. The Red Sox tie it in the seventh. Go ahead in the eighth. Hold on for dear life in the eighth and ninth innings. So on the one hand, you should feel good about the win. The question is, do you feel good about the season? And I just don't know how you could possibly get there after last night. Now, look, they win again tonight. They go into New York, take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. You want to tell me that they've turned a corner, they've woken up, they figure it out? Fine, I'm in. I'll be in at that point. Get me back to 500, and I'll start to think that maybe you have a shot. But one of the real takeaways from that thing last night, it doesn't take much for them to really be able to win a game, even against a good pitcher or a pretty decent team. Nathan Eovaldi is not Nolan Ryan. He's not Jacob DeGrom. He's not one of those. All he does, really, is keep you in the game. That's it. He's not one of these guys that's blowing people away night in, night out every time he pitches. Nathan Eovaldi is the definition of a mediocre pitcher in the big leagues.
But he's good enough to not make it 6-0, 5-0 by the time you get to the third inning.
He's good enough to not suck,
yeah,
Murray, basically. Is what it is. He's good enough to not suck. Again, all he does really is keep you in the game. Now, the first time he pitched, they played the Orioles, they get him 13 runs. But this should really tell you where the Red Sox are with regard to that pitching staff. This is why it's so demoralizing in some ways in the first 5 or 6 games of the year. They don't need great pitching. They don't. Not with their offense, not in a 60-game schedule. They don't need that. All they need is something halfway decent. Halfway decent. Good God. So you see it last night, and even then, the bullpen was Shakes the Clown at the end of the game. Did you see that? Matt Barnes, Brandon Workman. Matt Barnes came into the game with a 6-4 lead. One pitch, it was 6-3 lead. One pitch, it was 6-4. Yoenis Cespedes hit an absolute freaking rocket over the left field wall. I think I heard the ball whistling as it was flying through the air in New York on that home run. And so the bullpen's no great thing either down there now. Like, that's an issue too. And yet I look at it and I say, if they were just average on the staff, if they were just average, I think they'd finish with a winning record and make the playoffs. I do. Because I think that they can hit. Now, there's a couple things to get to tonight. One really as a primary thing from last night's game, and the other thing relates to tonight. I want to get to Joe Kelly again. We'll touch on that as well. But as it pertains to last night's game, and I want to ask fans this seriously, okay? When you watch the game, how much attention do you pay to what pitchers are being thrown? Like, do you dig into that? Do you look at it and say, here's how the Red Sox are pitching, and this is how I want them to pitch. This is smart. This is stupid. Or do you just rely on the announcers for that? Because Remy and Eckersley last night, Jerry Remy and Dennis Eckersley, part of the three-man booth on Nesson, they were all over the Red Sox last night. I've been waiting for this to come up because I noticed it earlier in the week when Zach Godley got into the game in relief against the Orioles. And I'll admit, I didn't know much about Godley. So the Red Sox need pitching. They pick up a guy. He gets on the mound. And you know what I noticed right away with Godley? Oh, he throws a ton of curveballs. Ton of curveballs. Just like, and I keep forgetting his name, the guy they got from the Padres with the spin, right? Colton Brewer.
Yeah.
Colton Brewer, ton of curveballs. Brandon Workman, ton of curveballs. Matt Barnes, ton of curveballs. Some of these lefties they got, curveballs. It's like all the Red Sox want is a guy who can throw curves. That's all they want. Now, I recognize in the case of Chaim Bloom that he's trying to build a staff on the fly, and there were no guys out there, not really, who throw 98 and paint. Okay, you don't get many of those guys available in the month of August in a 60-game season. That's effectively where we are now. So he's got limited choices. I get it. So you got to go with what you got. But I also think this is a thing the Red Sox like to do. I am so sick of watching Red Sox pitchers throw nothing but curveballs. They're coming out my ears. Do you realize, I looked this up today because I was curious, the Red Sox throw the lowest percentage of fastballs in the big leagues. And they were among the lowest last year that throw the percentage of fastballs. They were also among the lowest in 2018. However, I'll tell you this, that in 2018, the Red Sox basically threw 50% fastballs, half. Which I still think is a little low. I think you should throw a fastball more than half the time, particularly if you're able to spot it. Now, this staff this year is an exception, but you should be throwing the fastball more than 50% of the time. A well-located fastball is still the best pitch in the big leagues. Okay, if you know what you're doing with it, it doesn't have to be 98. It can be 93 and be plenty. So 35% of the time? Does anyone else find that odd? Do you guys find that odd? Jimmy Stewart, do you think that that's an absurdly low number?
Absurdly low, yes, Tony.
I mean, one out of every three pitches is a fastball?
It's stupid.
I don't understand it for the life of me.
Oh, I do.
They either don't want them throwing them because they're afraid of them, or they just want them to, I don't know, they got a bunch of meatballers.
Okay, so that's part of it. They do have a lot of meatballers.
So fear is one thing, but I also think that they're trying to be different. They're trying to do the opposite of what everybody else is doing because they have no other choice.
Okay, so here's what I will tell you about the whole 35% fastball thing. And this is not exclusively a Red Sox thing, although, again, they are last. They are last in fastball percentage in the big leagues, dead last. So I think they have taken it to an extreme, but there are a lot of teams having success by not throwing fastballs, which I hate. You know what the game is now? Let me find out what the opposition can't hit, and that's what I'm going to throw, even if I can't throw it for a strike. See, and I still think you could get similar results if you use your fastball properly, and I don't mean to get bogged down in the minutiae, but the game has changed so much.
Didn't Farrell have a similar obsession with the cutter? He was trying to get everybody to throw a cutter because nobody else was doing it.
Martin Perez is a guy who's going to throw a truckload of cutters tonight, Jimmy. You're going to see another. Yes, it's that sort of thing. They don't want anything with velocity that's even remotely straight. They don't want anything. And so this is a long roundabout way of me telling you I hate the way this team pitches. I've hated the way they pitch for a couple of years. They babied their pitchers last year. They weren't ready to go. And then they pitched puss ball. Totally on the mound. That's what the approach is. Total puss ball. And they're doing it again this year. And so I would just as soon have them out there trying to throw fastballs on the corners. Just don't miss. And if you miss, miss off the plate. And obviously they don't believe in their pitcher's ability to do that. But I hate the approach too. I cannot stand the approach of the pitching staff. Now, where are they going long term? Probably not very far. We all think the team sucks. I know that. You know that. But it doesn't mean that you at least can't try to play it the right way. And who knows? Maybe you win tonight against the Mets. Maybe you win a couple against the Yankees over the weekend and surprise us that all of a sudden the interest, the expectations in the team will change. But to me, if they keep pitching the way they pitch, they're not going anywhere. And if this is what they're going to do under Chaim Bloom, let me tell you point blank that I hate it. Hate it. As for the offense, you got a little bit of noise last night. That's a good sign. But if you're looking for consistency in the lineup, you're not going to get that either. So I want to touch on that. I want to touch on Joe Kelly. And then I actually have a question for fans about something that MLB is contemplating that would help them get out of the COVID-19 situation that involves the Miami Marlins right now and the Philadelphia Phillies. Okay, the Phillies also have had their games postponed through the balance of the weekend. They're not going to play because a member of the coaching staff tested positive. And so they're going to try to contain that thing in Philadelphia as well, which has led to speculation that MLB will implement a fairly radical rule change to help make up games this season. We'll ask you about that. We'll get to the lineups. Well, I want to follow up on Joe Kelly. We'll do all of that on the Baseball Reporters tonight.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is a show that's all about baseball. The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Brandon Workman wants to get this one, wants to pin this one down for the save. And the 3-1 to Nimmo. That's a strike.
3-1 high hook. Well, I tell you, if he walks him there on that hook, you second guess it, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and he got a gift, I think, on this one.
I think so, too. Late break, that ball's up.
That ball's high, yeah.
That is a gift. If he's thrown five curveballs, it's got to be another one, doesn't it?
You would think.
Yep, he did and did not get a call there, so it's ball four.
That's hard to believe he didn't throw one fastball in that hole at bat with a two-run lead.
It's beyond me, but that's why you call him the Yak Man, because he throws yakkers one after another. So many breaking balls before in my life. That's a ton of breaking balls.
He's not landing them either, 3-1.
This is ugly already.
Bounced it. Wow. So he's walked two in a row.
That was not even close. I don't know what that last pitch was. It didn't break much.
Can't get the fastball over when he throws it.
And his curveball's everywhere. One good one, one bad one. He's scuffling right now.
2-1 pitch to Conforto.
My Workman, he'll make you smoke cigarettes, man. Don't he?
Don't talk to me about that.
Here we go. Got to be another hook, unless he's trying to slip the cheese by him.
An edge of your seat night.
Wow.
Another one left up.
There's some ugly breaking balls. He's just really scuffling tonight.
One more look at that breaking ball, and you see it really doesn't do what Brandon Workman's curveball usually does. And that's very fortunate that ball was fouled off.
Boy, he is taking this to the limit.
Red Sox took it to the limit a long time ago. Curveballs. Seriously, if you're bored, and you will be, during the game, just count them. Count them. Count the curveballs. Count the number that they throw. Red Sox are on Fox tonight, by the way. But, man, holy crap, the number of curveballs. Speaking of which, speaking of curveballs, figuratively speaking, before I get to Ron Renicki in the lineup, let me ask you guys a question. The Miami Marlins situation. Miami games have been postponed all week. The Philadelphia Phillies games have been postponed all week. So MLB is, in theory, going to have all these games to make up. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic here, so there's all types of scenarios in which maybe the Marlins don't come back at all. If this thing spreads through the Phillies, maybe they don't come back at all. Again, a couple of teams are rubbed out in MLS. They didn't play. So as the season goes on, there are going to be these crises relating to COVID-19 and how MLB handles it. So if you are a fan of the game and you are a traditionalist of the game, you are used to everything in baseball being in groups of three. Three outs, three strikes, nine innings, et cetera, et cetera. Well, how about this one? The Players Association, the union, is surveying its membership and might propose either 2 7-inning games for a doubleheader or 9 innings for the opener and 7 for the nightcap during this season. Okay? So again, because of the number of games that might need to be made up, two scenarios. One, if we have to play doubleheaders, two 7-inning games, or the first one's 9 and the second one's 7. What do you guys think of that?
I want the 2 7s. And, you know, they're trying different stuff here in the 60-game season, and my hope would be is if they implemented that, it carries over going forward. So whatever makes the game speed up, if you have 7-inning doubleheaders, theoretically it speeds up. Go with that.
Jimmy Stewart?
I'll take the pair of 7s.
I mean, every time, right?
Every time.
We all would. Do you think there's any chance it would happen?
Yes.
I hope.
So I think that there's a chance it could happen this year. I do.
This is essentially an experimental season for everything, so why not?
So that's how I feel, too. But so here is the follow-up from that, though. And I'll tell you what, let me continue to read from the latest story, at least the one that I called up. And then you tell me whether you think these fears are justified or concerned. So one of the players that commented on this story was from the Yankees, Adam Ottavino, who's a setup man. He's basically, I don't want to say a middle reliever. That's not fair to Adam Ottavino. He's a little bit later in the game than that. But he says, I like 9 and 9 personally. I don't want to be marginalized out of the game. Once we go to 7-inning games, slippery slope there. Meaning that if they were to go to 7 games in doubleheaders, he fears it could become permanent. Hell, there are people who want to see 7-inning games on single days, let alone doubleheaders. And that it could then limit the effect or need for guys like Adam Ottavino who are setup men. Do you agree? Setup men. Do you agree?
Sure.
That it could marginalize relievers if you go to a 7-inning model.
It could, potentially.
Jimmy?
Yeah, tough. Yeah. Tough.
Oh,
pitch
well.
Better. Be an 8th, 9th inning guy.
Right.
Okay. Or an opener.
Well, so there is no 8th or 9th inning, right?
I mean, no, but the be an important 8th inning, 9th inning guy or 6th inning, 7th inning guy. That's what I mean.
Okay.
An end of game pitcher.
So, but I think he is. But I think the point is you might not need them at all. Your starter might be able to go the whole game, or the starter goes 6 and then you go to the closer. Like, it would really eliminate some of that stuff in the middle, which I like. But this is one reason why the union will never go for it, because it'll eliminate jobs. And if those guys are minimized, their salaries will go down. So I have a hard time believing that baseball will ever implement something like that in the long term, as much as I would love to see 7-inning games. I have a hard time believing that baseball would implement it in the long term.
But whereas more teams are going with openers, then this guy will probably still have a job, for just for an example, because he'll open games or he'll be a bulk inning guy for 2 innings instead of 1 inning.
Right, but he won't be as valuable, which means the salary will come down. And so
pitch better.
Well, so look, Jimmy, I'm with you. I mean, I think that ultimately that stuff will shake out. And if his salary goes down, then the value of a good starting pitcher will go up even more than it already is. So to me, just something to consider there. Interesting little nugget that came out of MLB today that I thought was worth touching on. The idea of 7-inning games instead of 9-inning games and doubleheaders. And how about the idea of 7 overall? Imagine that. As for the Red Sox lineup, have either of you guys been able to make hide or hair out of the Red Sox lineups? Is there any continuity do you see to the lineup this year at all?
No. None whatsoever.
Okay, let me tell you what the starting lineup is tonight.
Like darts on a dartboard.
Jose Peraz is leading off, playing third base tonight. He's at third base tonight, leading off again. The J.D. Martinez experiment of him batting second, that didn't last long because he's not hitting second tonight. Kevin Pillar is batting second. He's in center field. J.D. Martinez is your designated hitter. He's now hitting third. So Martinez, whom they wanted to put in the two spot, has now been moved out and batting third tonight. Whether that'll stay the same tomorrow, who the hell knows? Because it's like pick him out of a hat over there with Ron Renicki or the front office or whoever. I'll get to Renicki, too, in a minute. Because I have a hard time picking on Renicki this year for some of the stuff I don't like because I feel like he's caught in the middle. But I'm starting to wonder how much of a fight he's really putting up. And I've heard that Renicki is a guy who will speak up, but it feels to me like he's just... And if this is his idea of fighting back these lineups, I don't like that either. I don't like the idea of what I see on paper on a nightly basis. Peraza, Pilar, Martinez, Bogarts, Vasquez hitting fifth, Verdugo hitting sixth, Chavis, Benintendi, and I'm not going to be able to pronounce it. Araúz, the second baseman, who's the Rule 5 guy. All over the place. So, I'll tell you what, that's an interesting question. What bothers you more? If this is Renicki changing the lineups every night, or if Renicki's just doing what the front office wants, and these are the lineups the front office is giving them? What bugs you more as a fan? Holy crap. If I'm the Red Sox, again, I just think they make these things way too complicated. Fastballs if you're on the mound. Get ahead in the count. Set the hitter up. Throw the breaking stuff. Or I know everybody wants a pitch backwards now, but since everybody's doing it, it's not backwards anymore. That's number one. And then as it pertains to the lineup, here's a tip. Your 2, 3, 4, 5 should basically be the same every night. If you want an impact bat in the two spot, then put Xander Bogaerts there. Hit Devers third. Hit Martinez fourth. And then hit Mitch Moreland fifth against right-handers. And then you want to dink around a little bit from the five spot on down, fine. But those three hitters, Bogarts, Devers, Martinez, should be the same every night. It really should be the same every night. You shouldn't mess with that. Kyle's in Florida. Kyle, what do you got?
Yeah, Vaz, I just wanted to bring up, you know, I think the idea of seven-inning games is intriguing. Obviously, you know, it changes the sport a little bit, but it makes it faster. But what I thought was even interesting about that is I think it increases the overall quality of relievers. I mean, how many times are you watching a Red Sox game, even with a good bullpen, seeing guys that don't even deserve to be in the MLB in the fifth inning?
Well, so, Kyle, look, it's a fair point. But, again, if you play it out, okay, and thank you for the call. If you play it out and you say the seven-inning game, well, seven-inning games versus nine, that's 324 innings less that you have to account for during the regular season. Every team now. And really, it's more than that because you're going to play extra innings. But you're probably, I shouldn't even say that. You're going to get those anyway. So 324 innings that you eliminate, that's four relief jobs, maybe five, per team. So now you don't have to carry the same pitching staff you've carried in before. You can carry more positional players. So just the ripple effects of that are huge. You will lose jobs, or there'll be a shift in jobs because there'll be less volume to account for. I don't think baseball will ever go for it. What they need to do is speed up the nine-inning product, and then everyone would be happy with that and fine with that. But, you know, the ripple effects of it are massive, massive. I'd like to see it this season just to see how it works. Wouldn't that be fun? You watch a nine-inning game and then you see a seven-inning game and you can contrast the two as to how they're managed differently, what the real ramifications are. Like, to me, that would be interesting. It's something I'd love to see MLB try this year, along with the runner on second and extra innings, which appears to be working thus far, and the three-batter minimum. They need to get rid of the shift, all that stuff. But certainly some stuff to consider. As for the Red Sox, again, that pitching staff, you want to get all excited about two wins by Nathan Eovaldi, that's fine. I told you a pitcher can make a difference. And I still believe that, although with the way the other four spots are going, we'll see. Martin Perez on the mound tonight. If he can give him a better outing, I'll start to feel better. the complete unpredictability of that lineup. And I also want to get back to Joe Kelly, the Houston Astros, the 8-game suspension for Kelly. People seem to be fired up about that. What I'm fired up about is the way the Dodgers are handling this thing. We'll get to that after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Embarrassment, appalled, angry, all of the above. I mean, there's so many words to use, and appropriate for sure. I mean, Jerry, you hit it on the head. It is an embarrassment for Major League Baseball. You touched on it about, and let's make no mistake, it was one pitch. Can't count Correa's at bat. That was a slider. It got away from him. Okay, that one pitch, if you want to look at Bregman, all right, and it gets away with him with the fastball. But that's it. There was just one pitch that we're really focused on. But what they did here, MLB, Major League Baseball, the commissioner, whoever's dropping this down, has to look into a mirror. I said this yesterday. This is not the Dodgers' fault. This is their fault because they didn't do what was right to begin with. They didn't vacate the World Series. If they had done a proper punishment to begin with, then players, teams, organizations wouldn't feel like maybe they have to do something to get some sort of justice because they felt like all they got was not only World Series, but a slap on the wrist. And that is unfair to the rest of the league. If you did not want this to happen and you are sending a message to the rest of the league that if you do something like this to the Astros, you are going to get one of the harshest penalties that's ever been thrown out there in baseball, then you should have thrown down a harsher punishment yourself before you start doing this. Because if you had done that and made them vacate the World Series and that trophy, then when if something like this happened, then you have every right to go, hey, listen, we dropped the hammer on them. We took away the trophy. What more would you like us to do? But this is unacceptable. And this, MLB really, really dropped the ball.
You know who that is, Jim Murray? Did you hear that? Were you able to discern who the voice was?
Yeah, Nomar Garciaparra.
You ever heard Nomar like that? That sort of...
With emotion?
Yeah.
Not being a robot?
Right.
No. Yeah, he obviously felt strongly for it. How about that?
So I will say this, that as in his job as an analyst, now I disagree with his assessment of it, but if Nomar's bringing the heat like that every night on TV in L.A., good for him. Now, it shouldn't all be pro-Dodger, because that's what that was. Nomar grew up out there. He played for the Dodgers at the end of his career. He's now an analyst out there on the Dodgers cable network, just like Acker Remy here, and extremely harsh and critical of MLB and Rob Manfred for the 8-game suspension that was levied on Joe Kelly for throwing over the head of Alex Bregman the other night. More importantly, emptying the benches during a pandemic. I think that's really what the big issue was. So Kelly was going to get suspended either way. There's no doubt he threw at him. I think Nomar acknowledges that he threw at Bregman, all of that. But Kelly got 8 games. A lot of people are pissed off about it. They think that it's way too harsh because a lot of people are pissed off at the Astros. Which brings me to the Dodgers. Is anyone else sick of the crying from the Dodgers? What, were the Dodgers the only team victimized in this thing by the Astros? Because they're acting like it. Like it's only the Dodgers that were victimized. Like, I just, and when Nomar says if MLB had put down its foot and if MLB had punished the Astros the way that the Astros should have been punished, because again, Astros players were not punished, then maybe players wouldn't feel the need to take it out on them. Do you believe that? Do either of you guys believe that? That if MLB had punished Astros players, that players wouldn't retaliate at all on the field?
No, that wouldn't matter.
It's totally irrelevant. I'll give you a perfect example. Alex Rodriguez was suspended for an entire season. Word came out. He was punished for steroid use. He get in the batter's box, and Ryan Dempster hit him anyway. Ryan Dempster was on the Red Sox at the time. So Rodriguez got his punishment. He was getting hammered by the league. But no, the players wanted to let him know, we're on to you. We don't like the way that you act. We don't like the rules that you've been operating under, the lack of rules. So we're going to let you know. Independent of what the league does, we're going to let you know. So the idea that the Dodgers wouldn't have done this if Rob Manfred had penalized the Astros players, oh, stop. It's such a lie. That is such garbage. How many disputes over the years in sports has there been discipline, and then the next time the teams play, someone does something stupid again? Happens all the time in Major League Baseball. And the Dodgers have been crying about this for months, and they're still effing crying about it. I am so sick of the Dodgers whining about the Astros cheating. It was 3 years ago. I know it's all come to light, but it was 3 years ago. Get over it already. And to pin all your failures on the Astros is pathetic. So now I'm going back to Cody Bellinger in spring training. Bellinger was asked back in February now when a team's reported to camp and the Astros' cheating scandal was at the top of everyone's mind. Bellinger was asked about it and said, because the Astros issued public apologies, if you remember. Bellinger said, I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. He's the Astros owner. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving them immunity. Those guys were cheating for 3 years. I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Aaron Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us, but it's over. Stole the ring. So we can say definitively that the Astros would not have won that World Series. Now, look, I don't like it either, but we can't rewrite history. So I look at it and say, well, wait a minute. The Dodgers got back to the World Series the next year against the Red Sox. They got their asses kicked. They lost in five. They got their asses kicked. Oh, but you know what? Then they made it back in again, and they got to the World Series, or they got to the playoffs again. They lost. They've been in the postseason 6 years in a row. They've lost. They haven't won since 1988. So the Dodgers want to what? They want to pin that on the Astros too? All their failures in the 90s? Mookie Betts will be a good fit out there, by the way, because he's got a 200 career postseason average. So he'll do well for them in the regular season and then gag in October, just like the Dodgers do. I wonder if he'll blame the Astros too. It's funny, the Red Sox beat the Astros. Huh. I wonder how they did that. I am so tired of the Dodgers bitching, crying, moaning about the fact that the Houston Astros stole a championship from them in 2017. I'm tired of it. And I'm okay with the Dodgers taking it out on the field. It's good entertainment. I mean, absolutely fabulous for the viewer. But the whining, the constant whining, oh, God, please. And you know what? It's still going on. It's going on every night. We played Nomar for you. If the commissioner had done, now again, I think Nomar's doing his job. I'm actually happy to see it. Because I think it could have gone, things could have gone along better for him, a lot better for him here, particularly at the end, if he had been that blunt and that honest. It was a lot of passive-aggressive stuff with Nomar back then. Maybe he's changed, and maybe he's, you know, we all have anyway. So I'm actually happy to see that part of it. And I actually got along with him quite well when he was here. So this isn't born out of any sort of grudge or anything, and that's the only reason I tell you that. But the Dodgers, how about this in the broadcast last night? Altuve came up to the plate. What you're going to hear is just a very brief play-by-play. This was on Twitter today, and I saw it, and I thought it was worthwhile. Altuve came up to the plate, had two strikes on him, was looking for a breaking ball, got a fastball right down the middle and couldn't pull the trigger because he was fooled. Strike three, walked back to the dugout. The play-by-play, you're going to hear a play-by-play man, you're going to hear a voice of Oral Hershiser, again, another longtime Dodger who works on the Dodgers broadcasts. Here's what happened when Altuve went down on strikes.
Strike three call. Perhaps guessing something else. Two out. Guessing's harder than knowing.
Guessing's harder than knowing. So again, they're still harping on it. Still harping on it. And I get it. It was a big deal for LA. That was the year they were in the World Series. You know, they played the Astros in the primary cheating year. Okay, I get it. How long are they going to cry about it? How long is it going to go on? Every freaking time it comes up, they cry about the fact that they lost the World Series. As if somehow they are the only team that was victimized during the whole thing. The Astros are a wagon. They're still a good team. There's absolutely nothing. Now look, I'm upset that the thing wasn't on the level too. Okay, the Astros deserve to get hit hard, and frankly, I don't think they got hit hard enough. The general manager, the manager, the fine's a joke. I don't really care about the players because I knew the commissioner wasn't going to go after the players. What's he going to do? Suspend the whole team? And then the Astros can't play? So they have to go 0-162 before everybody's happy? Is that it's not realistic. Tickets to be sold, games to be watched, advertising spots to be sold, money to be made. They weren't going to wipe out the Astros for a whole season. They just weren't going to do it. So you have to live with the reality of that. But the crying from the Dodgers. What about the other 31 years since you've won a championship? What about the other 31 years? 31. You're going to pin those on the Astros too? Oh, God, please. I'm so tired of the Dodgers bitching. So tired of it. So, again, and I'm not telling the Nomars and the Hershisers and those guys that they can't do their job. They should. They should absolutely do their jobs. But the crying by the players and the fans, and Joe Kelly got mistreated. Joe Kelly knew exactly what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he knew what the consequences were going to be. So stop bitching now about the suspension. If you threw at those guys, you were going to get popped. He knew it. He did it anyway. And the Dodgers, like, Dodgers fans are calling him a hero. So fine, he's a hero. But the suspension was coming. It was part of the deal from the beginning. Joe's in Whitman. Go ahead, Joe.
Tony, the Dodgers are mad. They've been beaten by two cheaters 2 years in a row. And on the shift, if you're a major league ball player and you can't try to force a bunt or a hit the other way, you suck.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. The guy for the Mets last night, McNeil, I'm happy to see him do it at the very least. Looks to me like he's trying to fight that shift. How about this stat? I saw this today on the Stathead Twitter account. In 2016, 24% of all at-bats had a shift of some sort, partial or full. 24%. 4 years later in 2020, and I know the season has just started, you know what the percentage of shifts is this year on at-bats? Either of you guys want to guess, Murray, Jimmy Stewart?
60. I don't know, 48.
Jimmy?
I'll say 72.
55%.
I lose.
That was close.
More guys come up with three infielders on one side than not. Think about that. When a guy comes up to the plate now and there isn't a shift, that's in the minority. And people want to say, you got to leave the rule the way it is. You're missing the point. I would love to see guys hit to the other side too. They don't. They won't. They haven't. You've got to legislate it out. Because the hitters aren't going to change and teams are doing it more and more and more. You have to legislate it out.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporters on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.